Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Could the government weaponize ticks and Lyme disease? It's a possibility. Well, today we have author Chris Newby joins us to uncover the mystery surrounding one of the most controversial and misdiagnosed conditions of our time, Lyme disease, revealing the man behind a secret role in developing bug-borne biological weapons and raising terrifying questions about the genetics of the epidemic of tick-borne diseases. So join the discussion. Get your questions ready. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, Chris Newby. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Doing great.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you for joining Truth Be Told for the first time. I love to have newbies, and it's great to have you here, especially a subject that I was telling you before the show. I was like, you know, I grew up around ticks because I grew up in a small country town in Kansas, and we used to go out in the woods and we'd get ticks on us, and people would have one embedded in their, you know, and have to take a match and touch it and get it out of our bodies and blah, 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 blah. But I don't remember a lot about ticks and Lyme disease. So, but these days we hear about Lyme disease constantly. And, you know, I've had known people recently that's had, my niece had it, several people that I've known had Lyme disease. And you wrote this book, Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons. How in the heck did you get into this subject? How did you get interested in the subject and eventually write a book?
I know. How did a nice girl like you,
I know,
deep dive for 5 years into one of the darkest and most embarrassing biological weapons programs? It's surprising to me sometimes. But in 2002, uh-huh, my husband and my two middle school boys, we went to Martha's Vineyard. It's right off Massachusetts. And we had a beautiful vacation. It happened to be ground zero for outbreak of this three dangerous tick-borne diseases. We didn't know that at the time. Right. We went back to California, and the next year we spent being sicker than we'd ever been before. And just my husband and I, not my kids. And we got sicker and sicker. We thought we were gonna die and leave our kids as orphans at a certain point, and it took a year, 10 doctors, and $60,000 to finally get diagnosed with two deadly tick-borne diseases. And being an engineer and a science writer, really, really curious, that started this, what is now like an 18-year journey in producing an educational documentary on Lyme disease called Under Our Skin, and then a book, which is called Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease. So that's how I got into it.
So, but what was the intention? Was it first just to explain to people about what you were going through? And when was the discovery that this could be more than just a bug bite disease that nature created?
Well, there have been biological weapons rumors circulating around since Michael Carroll published his book, Lab 257, about a hypothesis that there was an outbreak, a release of diseased ticks from Plum Island, which during the Cold War, that was a focal point for anti-animal biological weapons. And so that was swirling around. But when we did, the director Andy Wilson and I did the documentary Under Our Skin, we decided not to go there, and we just focused on the central mystery is, why is Lyme disease so controversial? Why are the researchers who work on it say, oh, it's no big deal, easy to treat and cure, go away? And why are the symptoms that people are experiencing in the field so different than what the academic ivory towers say the disease is? And why is there still not a good test for it in the first month? Why is there no cure for the 10 to 20% of people who go on to get chronically ill with this? So the film just focused on that, and the director and I didn't go down the biological weapons rabbit hole. And right. After the film was released, I said, I'm done with Lyme disease. I got better myself. And then I went to this party, and it was an out of state party. I didn't know anybody there. And I ended up sitting at the kitchen table with this grizzly guy who looked like the salty dog captain in Jaws.
Right.
And he was into his cups, and he says, I said, oh, what did you do, you know, before you retired? And he says, I was black ops in the CIA. And then he started talking about old stories, Vietnam. He said he basically lived Apocalypse Now, the stuff in there. And then at the end of the conversation, he goes, but the strangest thing I ever did was drop poison ticks on the Cubans in 1962. And so that started. At that point, it was like, oh my gosh, this guy is so credible. And I verified his credibility. And I said, I can't walk away from this problem. It isn't just like greed in the medical system. It isn't just ignorance. There's something they're trying to cover up. And so I just had to continue on trying to figure out what was going on.
So what is percentage of people that actually die from Lyme disease?
Well, Lyme disease is caused by a little spiral-shaped bacterium that's mm-hmm. transmitted by tick bites. And I would say when you're bitten by a tick, it just depends on sort of where, if your tick is infected or not.
Right.
And every year, the latest numbers out of the Centers for Disease Control is about 500,000 people a year get a new case of Lyme disease. And I think we all remember when COVID started rolling across the world, right. When the US reached 500,000, that was a big deal. And just imagine every year 500,000 are getting Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. And of the people that are treated early enough with the recommended antibiotic dose, 10 to 20% of them go on to continue to be ill, chronic or long haul Lyme patients. So it's a huge unaddressed problem.
I was going to ask the not only symptoms, but the effects after quote cured or back to somewhat normal. Is there long-term effects, and what are those?
Well, everybody agrees that if you're treated promptly with antibiotics, mm-hmm. Usually 2 weeks of antibiotics, doxycycline or amoxicillin, within a month of the tick bite, you can be cured and nothing will happen. But that's if you don't have any other co-infections. There are 20 other sort of dangerous diseases that can be in that tick bite. It's not that unusual to have two or three disease agents be transmitted in one tick bite. And the problem with diagnosing Lyme disease early is the early symptoms are pretty much flu symptoms, which could also look like COVID symptoms. There's nothing really specific. Sometimes people have this characteristic rash. Sometimes it's a bullseye shape, like the pattern on my book.
Right.
but sometimes it doesn't have that clearing. Sometimes you don't see it. It's on your backside or under your hairline. And then the other thing that is sort of amazing, since it's been 40 years since they identified this organism, is there is no really accurate screening test in the first month after being bitten for Lyme disease.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of people think it's something else and they go on to get really sick.
And I, because I've known two people, and one, it took him a long time to even get back to normal. And he said even to this day, he still doesn't feel the same since he was infected. And I find it fascinating with the ticks itself. Is it just once it's embedded, or how does that work? Because, you know, like I said, I've grew up around it, around ticks, but I never really been stuck by one. They seem to, I don't know if they, my smell, they don't like me enough, or, but my sister used to get ticks embedded in her all the time.
Well, they have proven that certain people attract more tick and mosquito bites than others.
Right.
And the ticks are attracted to your emissions of carbon dioxide. And then I imagine soaps and perfumes can influence that, but there's no studies on that. What was the question?
No, it was just like, do they actually have to embed or have to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're very stealthy. They've been getting a blood meal, learning how to get blood meals for millions of years. They slowly, their little mouth parts drill in, mm-hmm. like a little steam shovel. They release a numbing agent so you don't feel it. They release cement so you can't really scratch them off easily. And then what they do is their gut is like a bellows, and they start sucking in blood. And the germs within the tick are in the saliva, or Lyme is in the gut of the tick, and then it transmits those organisms through your bloodstream. It can be attached, like viruses can be transmitted in as fast as an hour. Lyme disease, they usually have to be attached longer than that to transmit. Right.
Is there, because I know there's, you know, the really small ticks, and then there's those big, fat, juicy ones. Or, you know, there's several different types of ticks. Is it all the same, meaning they carry the same type of Lyme disease with them? Or is there particular ones that carry the most Lyme disease?
Well, it seems like there's three or four stages depending on the species of ticks. The tiny ones are the nymphs. They're the size of a poppy seed.
Right.
They can transmit Lyme as well as the big ticks. Chances are you'll feel a big tick on you. Yeah. And so in a way, the nymphs transmit it more. There are two major ticks that cause problems. The hard-shelled deer tick, called the Ixodes tick, transmits Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. The new kid in town is the Lone Star. And it's called Lone Star because it has a white dot on its back. And in the mature phase, and that nasty critter is more aggressive, swarming. It can transmit through its saliva a long-term allergic reaction to red meat.
Oh,
Kitchen
really?
Burgers, goodbye. And it transmits what is probably the deadliest tick-borne disease in the U.S., which is Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
Right, yeah.
Where you can go into a coma in 14 days and die under certain circumstances.
That's what we used to call it, Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
Tick fever.
Right, right. Okay, so there's a lot of people in the chat room that they're agreeing. A lot of people said for years they believe that this is true. When you said that you spoke with the special ops guy, so, you know, that's someone that, you know, had an opportunity to see firsthand of what the military and the government, how they spread it. But was there a particular time that you found out in your discovery when this started happening? Because like I said, I don't remember or maybe it's just because now we have the news and social media spreading the news faster, but how long has the Lyme disease been around when it comes to biological?
Well, I'll back up after the tick dropper talked about what he found. Then I went about like finding other eyewitnesses and documents to back that up, because you can't ever trust like one source.
Exactly.
And the next source I went to was Willie Burgdorfer, who is the NIH scientist who claimed discovery of the bacterium that causes Lyme disease. And he published that in 1981. And he began investigating this crazy outbreak of what they called Lyme arthritis, where you would have swollen joints, and it particularly affected kids, and all the other Lyme symptoms that you have, fatigue, pain, neurological issues. That showed up around Lyme, Connecticut, and a scientist from Yale, Alan Steer, first documented a case of Lyme arthritis in 1968. And what happened when I interviewed Willie Burgdorfer is he said there were multiple organisms that were making people sick. And he didn't say the Lyme disease spirochete was the bioweapon. He said it was another organism. And he was, during the investigation where we were about to publish, he was told to not mention that in his discovery paper ever, and collect ticks and do slides of the organisms that didn't include that organism. And he told another journalist that he believed that that was one of the organisms that the Biological Weapons Program was developing in the 50s. And oh, by the way, he said he was an integral part of the Biological Weapons Program for about 20 years. And that was with Fort Detrick, Maryland. That's the headquarters of the Biological Weapons Program.
Right.
And that was a shocker for the person who was heralded as being a hero for discovering this dangerous new disease to all of a sudden admit, oh, by the way, I lied about that discovery, and I worked on germs of mass destruction for years for the U.S. government. So it was pretty shocking reveal.
Right. Well, I find it fascinating because normally ticks is usually in wooded area, a lot of moisture. And so you would think that would limit the amount of exposure to human beings. I could see where like mosquitoes would be the best one, because they're big cities, small towns, rural areas, countries, in the country, in the woods, in the forest. Why would they choose ticks to expose people to some type of biological weapon? Why not something that would expose way more people? Or are they just trying to hit the smallest group of people?
Well, most people don't realize how ginormous the bug-borne weapons program was, and they tried everything. they learned a lot of things when they interrogated the biological weapons developers from the Nazis and the Japanese. And the Japanese were weaponizing fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes and thrips. And Hitler was doing pretty much the same. And so what Willie Burgdorfer told me is that he put plague in fleas. He put yellow fever virus in mosquitoes, the same kind of mosquitoes that carried dengue and Zika, and then multiple diseases in ticks. And so why would you do that? Well, it's the perfect stealth weapon. It's a complement to traditional kinds of warfare. You know, there's no fingerprints. It's a slow roll kind of weapon. Mm-hmm. You can tune the germs and the insects to your military objectives. So you can make it fatal, like tularemian ticks, or you can make it incapacitating, like Venezuelan equine encephalitis in ticks, or mosquitoes, where it just makes you blah, like flu that goes on and on.
But what would the purpose of just let's say the corona or the flu or the black plague or whatever diseases we've had, you know, in the last couple of hundred years, you know, some, you know, they say is a natural born, and then some of get, you know, that they're saying is, like you said, you know, with Hitler and governments creating biological weapons. What would be the reason? How am I gonna say this? A government would create this for, is it for population control? Is it just for control in itself? Is it to build more reliant on drug, pharmaceutical companies? What would you think the reason this would be created?
Well, for a chronic incapacitating germ like tularemia, which is also called rabbit fever in ticks, what would happen is you drop them ahead of boots on the ground, and it would make a huge population really sick.
Oh.
You wouldn't outright kill people, so when you took over the city, you'd still have the power plant operator, and you'd ask them how to operate it, or the factories. And it would tie up the healthcare resources so they couldn't treat soldiers, rather than one mortician if it was like a really fatal thing. And I saw Pentagon reports that said what a cost-effective weapon biological weapons are, like tularemia compared to nukes. And they some number cruncher actually said, oh, well, you can kill a person for $1.33 with tularemia.
Right.
And also for Cuba, they had a different military objective. There was the Red Scare, Fidel Castro. They were afraid of Fidel Castro and his partnership with the Russians. They decided, let's just trash their entire economy, and then maybe the people will rise up and oust Fidel Castro. I'll just read out of the book.
Yeah, please.
This is from some files that I found to back up what the CIA guy said about dropping ticks on the Cuban sugarcane workers. And this talks to the method behind their madness. On a discrete, strictly need-to-know basis, defense is to submit a plan by 2 February on what it can do to put a majority of workers out of action, unable to work in the cane fields and sugar mills for a significant period for the remainder of this harvest. It is suggested that a planning considered non-lethal bioweapons insect-borne, and that's Task 33 Cubic Project by Brigadier General Lansdale. So it was total economic warfare against Cuba for political reasons.
Right. And
mostly the Kennedy brothers were pretty pissed that the Americans were red-faced after the botched Bay of Pigs invasion. Payback.
So, right. Do you see in your research and studies of if Lyme disease has created a stronger version of it, or is it pretty much the same, or do they have to keep infesting the disease into the ticks and to create the Lyme disease?
Well, the Lyme disease bacterium, I found no evidence that that was ever a serious biological weapon.
Right.
They, in the early 50s, they were stuffing ticks. They had little pipettes they put in their mouth and stuffed various diseases to see which ones would stick, which ones would live inside the belly of a tick. Because in nature, it takes hundreds of years for a microorganism to find a tick where they can live happily, not kill the tick, and the tick can bite and move on. So they were artificially feeding them. So it was sort of a forced symbiotic relationship. And they put rabies in ticks, leptospirosis, which is another spirochete somewhat related to Lyme disease, and Venezuelan equine encephalitis, and relapsing fever ticks inside these hard ticks. So they tried all that. And then as the program advanced, they had to somehow keep two organisms alive and figure out how to deploy it. Did they spray it or put it in a bomblet that exploded at a certain altitude? They tried all these experiments, and they realized it was impractical to have this bug germ combo. And so they moved to just the germs. And they would grow the germs like you grow or in giant tanks like you would brew and ferment beer, which is bacteria and hops. And so they did that in, you know, 1,000-gallon tanks, and then they would freeze dry those bacterium, and they'd be these little spores, and then they would spray them from planes, trucks, scuba men, buoys. They even did an open air test of live bacteria in that spore form in the New York subway. So the goal was figure out ways to deploy it that were foolproof, and they would test it in different atmospheric conditions, cold conditions like Moscow. They had picked out cities that were equivalent climate to Moscow and Vietnam. They did tests in Hawaii to simulate the weather conditions in there, in Vietnam and Korea. So it was huge, extensive.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's fascinating to think that they don't think that it's going to come back and affect themselves or the government itself. Because it seems like, you know, a lot of these diseases come back and affect a lot of the either politicians or military. Do you think there is a cure for Lyme disease that they're just not doing it? I know it seems like everything we have is treatable. You know, that's why I was bringing up the pharmaceutical companies, because it seems like they never seem to come up with a cure for much except for treating it. What do you feel about the treatment of Lyme disease? Do you think that it's more government pharmaceutical companies working together, or?
In a way, it's not deliberately evil, but it's the monetary incentive. So right. Lyme disease, it's well known that if you treat it early with cheap antibiotics, you can cure it.
Right.
But those antibiotics are off patent. Pharmaceutical companies can't make much money off of it. So they're not going to invest money into new antibiotics. And the U.S. government knows that's a problem, because antibiotic resistance does blossom over time. Instead, you know, if you look at the symptoms of chronic Lyme patients, it's pain, inflammation, depression, because you're really sick and you feel horrible. And all those drugs, the opioids and, you know, the drugs that help with inflammation, they're blockbuster drugs and they're on patents and they can earn a lot of money. And so that's where the effort's been, in treating the symptoms rather than the root cause. So I don't know if that's deliberately evil or just the for-profit medical system, how they behave given the incentives.
Well, for everybody tuning in, this is Chris Newby. She wrote a book, and it's all about Lyme disease and ticks. Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons. And in your research, was there any challenges? Was there anybody that government, military, that came and said, hey, you know, you're spreading lies, or you better watch out, or did you have pretty much free rein?
No, I mean, many of the documents on the biological and bug-borne weapons programs are still classified. The FOIA system in the U.S. is fairly broken. I have many FOIAs that have been outstanding for years and years, and then some of them, they say, well, we have those documents, but we're not going to give them to you because of the interests of national security. And so I would say the first time we interviewed Willy Burgdorfer, who was in the biological weapons program, this was for the documentary, and this was in 2007. We couldn't get any officials to talk about Lyme disease, like CDC or NIH, on camera. So Willy Burgdorfer was retired from the NIH. So we thought, well, he'll talk.
Right.
And we showed up at his house in Hamilton, Montana, and we were setting up lights and camera for about 45 minutes, and there was a knock on the door, and it was a high official at the Rocky Mountain Lab. It's a bio-level 4 lab where the most dangerous pathogens are studied, and he said, I've been asked to sit in on this interview. And so the director was upset and said, no, It was a really tense moment. So I would say at that moment, I was afraid they were going to, the men in black were going to come and take our videotapes or shut the interview down.
Right.
But we didn't. And then in that interview, it was the first intimation that Willie Burgdorfer wasn't telling us everything. He did say the NIH knows that Lyme disease is chronically disabling and it's hard to cure. He said it affects children with their developing neurological systems much more intensely than adults. And then when we were shutting down, he had a little smile and he says, I didn't tell you everything. So that was the first clue that there was things they didn't want us to know about Lyme disease. And then when I was doing the book, every time I went to Hamilton, I knew I was being watched and my email was being read because of people who would approach me at the restaurant attached to the only decent hotel in town. So there was like husky guys who looked like they were Navy SEALs jogging past us in the middle of the day.
Right. You're like, what are these guys doing here? Yeah. Well, this is the time that I ask my co-host in the chat room, the people tuning in on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, we'd love to have you guys ask some questions. And there are a couple questions that I saw pop up. And we know, for naturally born diseases, viruses, somewhere out there, there's always a naturally grown something that could help cure it. Do you know any natural products or natural things you could do to take to help with, since you went through it, you and your husband went through it yourself, was there anything that was naturally grown that helped Lyme disease?
Well, we had a bad combo of tick-borne diseases. We had this malaria-like cattle disease called babesiosis and Lyme disease. So we needed a certain amount of antibiotics to get our germ load down enough so our own body can heal. So I would say there are some really good herbal protocols, but if you have a really bad infection, it can be life-threatening and you may need the hardcore antibiotics and antibiotics. So there are some good books out there on herbal solutions. So I would just go on Amazon and look for those. I would say a really good source of patient information for people who have Lyme or think they might have Lyme is lymedisease.org. Mm-hmm. They have a symptom checklist. They'll help you find a doctor. And they have a lot of helpful information on insurance coverage because it can be a really expensive disease to treat, especially if you're chronically ill.
Well, and another question was, is Lyme disease only diagnosed with a test?
No. If you have the hallmark bullseye rash, that's enough for a doctor to say, yeah, you have it, and let's start treatment. The tests are better as the disease progresses. The early Lyme test isn't that great. They're working on better tests. Hopefully they'll be out soon. And then sometimes you have a person who's has a tick-borne disease, has so many diseases, you don't pick up all the diseases at the beginning because your antibodies are all glommed up and they don't get picked up by the antibody tests, which are indirect tests. And some of the tick-borne diseases hide out deep within your tissues and they don't float around in the bloodstream. So you might not pick them up. So it can be a long process. Right. It reminds me of in high school, you would do these chemistry experiments where your teacher would give you a hidden number of chemicals in a test tube and you had to go through an hour and try to sort them out. So that's what happens with all these tick-borne diseases. It's a longer diagnostic process than you would imagine.
And I think it's important to I mean, very obvious and very self-explanatory is when you go into the woods or wherever you're going, camping or fishing or hunting or wherever, always, especially spring, summer, and fall. Winter, usually you don't see too many ticks, but always check yourself afterwards. That's important. We'd always get back to the house and mom and like, all right, get in your underwear. Let's check your hair and your body and underarms. And so, did you find both you and her husband find the ticks, and remove them, or when you first found?
No. It'd probably been attached for a day or so when I washed my hair and it came out, or maybe it was on the clothes that I, beach clothes that I wore the next day. I mean, one advice is don't re-wear your clothes without throwing them in the dryer to fry those ticks. The other really important advice is if you pull out an embedded tick, especially if it's engorged, don't throw it away. First of all, don't burn it, put alcohol on it, twist it, get a pair of tweezers and yank it really fast so it can't dig in and squeeze whatever's in its belly into you. Then save that tick, put it in a little plastic baggie with a damp piece of paper towel, and send it to the many places now that will screen your ticks for many tick-borne
diseases. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, some for free, like PA Lyme, that's Pennsylvania Lyme, they'll test your ticks for free if you're from Pennsylvania. And their local health departments, which, well, they're sort of tapped out. But I would pay a minimal amount to get the tick tested. It's faster and it works better than the human test in the first month. And then you'll know if you have any of the really dangerous tick-borne diseases, the combo, which I call the germ gangbang in your hose.
And somebody, Bradwick, said in the chat room, he said, eat garlic before you're heading to the woods. I don't know if that's true, but
I've heard that works. I've heard that works, especially for mosquitoes. I don't know if there are any studies on that.
So since the ticks and mosquitoes, we know, is there any new ones that you've, during your research, that have been popping up that you feel that are part of this same experiment or same type of biological warfare that we should be aware of?
Well, I think one of the most shocking U.S. military experiments that I read about, and it was sort of hiding in plain sight, is open air uncontrolled tests on Lone Star ticks. So I talked about them a little earlier, that the ones with the white dots on the backs. So before the biological weapons program, they were pretty much in the deep south, rarely seen above the Mason-Dixon line. But the military, the Army, and the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission paid this researcher in coastal Virginia to make a bunch of ticks. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of ticks, radioactive, by injecting a pregnant mom with radioactive fluid. Then that mom ticks, 2,000 to 3,000 eggs would be laid, and all those larval and nymph ticks would be radioactive for life. So what did he do with those? He divided them into lots of 1,000, and then he gridded off a huge swampy area and wooded area, and he released 1,000 ticks in each square. And then every month or so, he would go out with his unfortunate postdocs, and they would collect the ticks in each square and put them in their discrete square containers. And then he would use a Geiger counter to see how far the ticks had crawled for months to years. And then he would take those ticks and release them back. If he collected adult ticks, he would paint them with fluorescent paint so he could track them too. So why would you do this? Well, if you're going to drop infected ticks on the Russians, maybe in Ukraine, their breadbasket, you want to know when you release the ticks, how far and fast the diseases that they spread. Now what's the trouble with that experiment, which would never have been approved nowadays? Well, it's radioactive ticks. Are you forcing mutations of the germs in the ticks, of the ticks themselves? There are no controls. And also, that experiment was done on the Atlantic bird flyway. So ticks bite birds. Birds can fly hundreds of miles a day as they're migrating, you know, from South America up through Canada. So sure enough, like 2 years after that experiment, the Lone Star ticks were found on Long Island, established colonies. They were spreading deadly Rocky Mountain spotted fever. A bunch of people were dying on Long Island, and they didn't know why. And it's because, I think it's because of these experiments. And then there's the meat allergy that those ticks cause and the deadly Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And they're very aggressive ticks. They're unlike the deer ticks, they have rudimentary eyes on their shoulder. So they don't just wait on a blade of grass to bite you. They actively stalk you and swarm you. And people, you can have hundreds of them on your leg.
Oh, we've been through where you walk out and you're like, oh my God, and there's tons of ticks on your legs. And I was going to ask you about that. Can ticks, and there's another one in the chat room I ask after this, but can ticks transfer? Because, you know, we go deer hunting and my dad was a butcher. And so he used to, you know, butcher a lot of local beef and deer. Can it get transferred over to beef and deer? And then once eaten by humans, can that affect the humans itself? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know of any studies on that. I don't know of any studies on that. The transfer of spirochetes like Lyme disease through breast milk is very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have said they found the spirochetes in breast milk and vaginal fluid and semen fluid. So, so that's sort of a hot topic, and no scientist has dared to go there because, I mean, one thing is Lyme disease and tick-borne diseases are incredibly underfunded. And so the competition for those grant dollars is really high. And if you're going out, coloring outside the box, you're just not going to get a grant.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if you're kind of pushing the boundaries, they may not be interested in giving you some cash to look right into it. Well, before we get out of here, I mean, what is your hope and what is your reason to really share this news and expose this, you know, potential biological weapon to the masses? What's your purpose?
First of all, it's just to help the millions of people who are sick now with tick-borne diseases. And there's just a huge lack of knowledge on the frontline physicians on what the late stage Lyme disease symptoms are like and how to treat these diseases. And also the really confusing set of mixed symptoms for combined tick-borne diseases. So, you know, by exposing this program, I'm hoping to force the government to release the documents on what were their hundreds of open air experiments involving tick-borne diseases, where were they and what did they release? And then most importantly, what cures and preventions did they develop for our soldiers as they worked through the process of developing a biological weapon? So to help the sick people now. Second thing is to learn from our mistakes. Like, there's a certain human hubris where if you mess with nature and weaponize these live organisms, what makes you think that it won't get out of the lab or there'll be blowback?
Right.
And certainly we saw that with Cuba. Cuba, we drop poison ticks and it's 50 miles as the bird flies to Florida. Do we think that someone in Florida might have gotten those diseases or the Lone Star ticks? And one thing I do in my book is I go through Willy Burgdorfer's whole life, and there's many documented accidents that happened in his lab where lab workers got really sick, including himself. Willy Burgdorfer got Lyme disease and rickettsia diseases when he was working on them. Could have been fatal. And a good example of that is Florida is about to release genetically modified mosquitoes. And, you know, I wish all those people designing that those studies will read Bitten and realize, oh, I have to be really careful before I do this. And then we have CRISPR, which allows you to cut and paste genes and do gain of function experiments on like bat viruses. And there could be bad stuff that happens when you do that.
It's scary. I mean, it's scary when you start messing with genes and DNA and all that. It's pretty scary. And even somebody said, what about chiggers? Like I said, out here in California where I live now, you don't have chiggers. Like I don't, but in Kansas or where I was from, I remember if you go out without your shoes and in shorts, man, it would just, your whole summer you'd be bitten with chiggers. Have you heard about any about chiggers being affected with that type of disease or anything?
Well, chiggers are arachnids also, just like ticks. They're from the arachnid genus or class. I can't remember the level. And I haven't heard specifically chiggers, but today there's this really bad germ called Bartonella. It's also called cat scratch fever, and I heard that can be transmitted by bed bugs and dust mites.
So the list goes on and on and on.
No.
Yeah. Well, this is very, very fascinating, very interesting. And again, the book is called Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons. Well, Chris, how do people find you, find out more information? People are loving the conversation and learning more about this, or at least even validating some people's belief that this was a biological weapon. How do people find out more about you and the book?
Well, my website, which is on your screen, and then you can order the books through all major channels, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. It's Kindle and audiobook. If you're just dipping your toe into Lyme disease, you might want to watch the documentary first, which sort of describes the symptoms, how it's transmitted, and the political landscape, and how you really have to fight and be your own advocate to get tested for Lyme disease and tick-borne diseases, and to get long-term treatment if you're really sick. So you can watch that documentary for free if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber.
Oh, nice. Perfect. Well, I'm sure people will appreciate that. You don't get too much for free these days.
We do pray for Prime, but...
Right. Well, we appreciate you, Chris, for doing the research and sharing your knowledge and years of study. And I'm glad you and your husband are feeling better and back to normal. I guess I don't know what you were like before, so I guess hopefully back to normal.
Well, yeah, I'm back to normal, so I'm good. I feel like I was one of the lucky ones, and I just, you know, do those tick checks because I have seen so many bad cases, which I guess is what keeps me going. I don't want any other family to go through what I've seen.
Yeah, and like I said, my niece who lives in Connecticut, she actually had it for quite a while. It took her a long time to get over it. But thank you guys, and thank you everybody tuning in to Truth Be Told and all the chat rooms, and appreciate people saying they're going to be sharing this show, and appreciate that. Make sure you subscribe, share it, leave a comment, like it. And go to all of our, you know, Apple and iHeart and Spotify, Pandora, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast, Truth Be Told is there. And until next time, I'm Tony Sweet. And take care of yourselves and check your underarms, under your boobs, wherever you have crevices. You may find a tick after going out hiking. So until next time.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
See you then. Bye.